This talk is about online migration for geo distributed storage system. This is a joint work with Marcos and Mahesh from Microsoft Research. So nowadays, many internet applications are deployed in a geo distributed fashion in order to cope with the increasing storage demand from end user. By geo distributed, I mean that the application being deployed over multiple data centers or multiple sites. The benefit of having geo-distributed application is that it can provide scalability, reliability, and access locality, meaning that the user can access their data stored at a nearby site. In order to provide this property, the underlying storage system needs to be able to support migration. That's because when there are many sites to place the data, usually there's one site that is better than the other. However, the best site for the data may change over time because user can relocate, workload characteristics change, new sites are created, or then new network technology. So we need migration to move data around. In order to have an efficient and flexible migration, there are three requirements for the migration mechanism. First, it needs to be online, meaning that the data needs to be available and consistent during migration. Second, it needs to be able to support canceling or changing the target of migration in order to cope with the dynamic change of the workload. And finally, it should be easy to integrate with caching and replication. So let me give you an example where migration can work together with caching to support a scenario. So let's say we have four different data centers, and the user both stay at Cambridge, so his mailbox should be stored at the Cambridge data center. Now both going to Redmond for a conference. The system should create a cache for him at Redmond in order to provide access locality. And now let's say the Cambridge data center run out of capacity and his mailbox need to move to Silicon Valley in order to provide load balancing. This migration might take a long time. And in the meanwhile, Bob will go to China to travel for vacation, for example. Then the system needs to migrate his cache from Redmond to China in order to provide access locality. Now if we want to flood the cache should go to Silicon Valley instead of going to the own home of his mailbox, which is at Cambridge. So there are many distributed storage systems that can provide migration. They either use locking or logging technique. So let me first explain what is locking. So basically, if we want to migrate data from the own site to the new site, we first lock on the right access to the new own site, and then copy the data to the new site, delete the data at the own site, and release the lock. Of course, the problem with this, of course, is that on the right are blocked during migration, and migration may take a very long time. So a better approach is called logging. In logging, before we transfer the data to the new site, we're going to create a write log to record all of the new coming write, and then copy the data at the own site to the new site. And when this happens, all of the read and write requests still go to the own site. And by the end of the transferring, we will lock the system, transfer the log over to the new site, apply the write log over there, and then delete data at the own site and release the log. So the problem with this approach is that this is still disallow write during the transferring of a log. And more importantly, during migration, all of the read and write requests going to the own site, which is not desirable for two reasons. First, having the write going to the own site is wasted of bandwidth because those write eventually need to go to the new site. Second, the common use case of migration is we want to direct read and write traffic to go to the new site. So the sooner the read and write requests go to the new site, the better it is. But in this locking technique, all of the read and write requests only go to the new site after the entire migration process finished. In addition to that, these two techniques are designed for simple migration. In order to integrate with caching and replication, it requires additional complexity. So in today, I'm going to tell you a new approach to do migration using distributed data overlay. Using overlay, we can address all of the concerns with locking and locking technique I showed in the previous slide. In particular, the data will be accessible at all time. Using overlay, the benefit of migration can be realized quickly, meaning that when the migration starts, all the write will go to the new site immediately. And the read will be served at the new site as soon as the data transfer to the new site. The intuition is that the read first go to the new site first. If the data is not there, it will be redirected to the own site. And finally, overlay seamlessly support caching and replication. I want to emphasize that data overlay has nothing to do with network overlay. So first, let me explain the overlay concept. Overlay is a very simple abstraction. Basically, I can stack up multiple transparencies or paper in order to produce the final image as you see in this picture. So these transparencies or paper are overlay. And each overlay will contain a portion of the final image. And if you look at the overlay stack from the top, any portion of the image you cannot see in the top overlay, you will see it in the underneath overlay. So let's apply this abstraction to a storage system. An object in the storage system will be presented by a stack of overlay. Each overlay will be at a different machine at a different physical location. Each overlay also contains data, and the combination of the data of the old overlay represent the object. The data at the top overlay will override the data at the underneath overlay. In the next few slides, I'm going to tell you the semantic of four basic overlay operations, which is create, read, write, and migrate. So usually an object contains only one single overlay with data written on it. But we can create a new overlay on top of the existing overlay, and there will be data written on the new created overlay. Similarly, we can stack up another overlay on top of the two existing overlay. Now let's say there's a read request come. The read will first arrive at the top overlay, and starting from there, going down to the stack of the overlay until it reaches the overlay that the data can be served. Write even simpler. Write on way go to the top overlay, and the data is written there. So let's go to a more interesting operation, which is a migrate operation. So let's say we have one object with one single overlay at the red machine, and we want to migrate this object from the red machine to a yellow machine. So what we will do is basically we stack up a new overlay at the yellow machine. And when this new overlay is created, on the right will go to the new overlay. And in the meantime, the data can be copied from the red machine to the yellow machine. And while this process is happening, on the read and write still can go on. At the end of the copy, we can delete the data at the read machine. And this is the end of the migrate operation. Okay, so let's come back to the example, and I will show you how to use overlay to support this scenario. So the user Bob lives at Cambridge, so his mailbox can be present by an overlay at Cambridge data center. While I'm doing this animation, at the bottom right-hand side, you will see the structure of the overlay stack. So now Bob go to Redmond. In order to create a cache for him at Redmond, we'll create an empty overlay at Redmond. And now Bob can read and write to his cache. So now if we want to migrate his mailbox to from Cambridge to Silicon Valley, what we will do is we create another overlay, an empty one, on top of the Cambridge overlay and below the Redmond overlay. And then the data can be copied from Cambridge to Silicon Valley. Now we can delete the overlay at Cambridge data center. Okay, so now both move to China. In order to migrate the cache to China, we create another overlay on top of the Cambridge overlay and store at China. Then we can copy the cache from Redmond to China and then delete the overlay at Redmond. So as you can see, the most important feature of overlay structure is that when the overlay are created or deleted, or the data copied among overlay, the data is still consistent for read and write requests. So in order to implement this idea of overlay, we need some extra data structure. In particular, at the server side, each of the overlay need to maintain local pointer to point to the above and below overlay. These pointers are shown as arrow in my slide. The pointer that point to the above overlay are called children pointer. Those that point to the below overlay are called parent pointer. And these pointers are responsible to redirect read and write requests to the correct overlay. At the client side, the client need to cache the structure of the overlay in order to send the read and write request to the correct overlay. However, the stack may be stale, so there may be some structure that's missing from the cache. So the client may send the request to the wrong overlay. For example, in this case, the client will send the write request to the middle overlay instead of the top overlay. This overlay knows that there's another overlay on top of it thanks to the children pointer. So the write request will be redirected to the overlay at the do machine. And this overlay knows that it's the top overlay, so the data will be written there. Overlay is a distributed protocol, so we need to design this protocol carefully in order to address all the challenges of concurrent operation. The detail of the design is in the paper, but here I'm going to show just one example of such challenge. So let's say we go back to the create operation. We want to create a new overlay, which is above the red overlay and below the green overlay. So this operation needs to create a new overlay at the yellow machine. It also needs to update the pointer of the overlay at the green machine and the red machine. But these pointers are actually at different machines. So one might think that we need to update all of these pointers atomically using two-phase commit in order to make them independent with the read and write request. But it turned out that we do not need two-phase commit if we update them in a particular order. So if we update them, if we update the child overlay of the below, the child pointer of the below overlay before the parent pointer of the above overlay, then we ensure that this update can interleave with read and write requests and the data is still consistent. Okay, so we build a distributed storage system that realize the idea of overlay called NOMAC. In NOMAC, we will have a directory service that map an object ID to the size and local ID of the root overlay of an object. We will have many storage server that actually store the overlay, and we also provide a client library that expose an object storage interface for all the applications. And one of the applications we build is the NOMAC file system. Okay, so let's evaluate the performance of overlay. First, we want to compare this overlay technique with system that use locking and logging. So in this experiment, we have an object of 15 megabyte initially at Redmond, and the client at Silicon Valley will issue one read and write request every 200 milliseconds. In order to provide access locality, at the time of 50 seconds, we migrate the object from Redmond to Silicon Valley. So you can see that in this graph, the x-axis is the time, and the y-axis is the latency of the read and write request. Before migration, the latency of the read and write is around 30 milliseconds. After migration, the read and write requests are local, so it's close to 0 millisecond. During migration, write are not allowed if we use locking technique. If we use locking, read and write is still allowed during migration, but the data is still serving from Redmond, so the latency is still 30 milliseconds. And at the time of 300 seconds, there will be a small period to transfer the lock to the write lock to Silicon Valley. So the write are not allowed during that small period. Now, if we use overlay, we can see that when the migration starts, all the write will go to the latency of the write are close to zero at the very beginning. The average read latency decrease gradually when the data will copy over to Silicon Valley. In this graph, each point is basically the average of all the latency in a small period of time. So you can see that the read latency decrease gradually during the migration period. And more importantly, there's no time that the data is not accessible. So using overlay is not only better than locking and locking technique in this simple benchmark. It also can provide a more complex scenario that locking cannot provide. So in this experiment, let's say I have a user initially at UK and he have 50 megabyte of data. Her working set is 2 megabyte. And at the beginning, all the read and write requests are local, so the read and write latency are close to zero. At the time of 62nd, she moved to Boston, Massachusetts. A cache is created for her at for her working set at Massachusetts, and her that entire data set will be migrated from UK to Massachusetts. In this experiment, we compress the travel time, both the time the user go to the new location and the time the user stay at the new location. So you can see that after the migration start, write latency close to zero, read latency decrease gradually. And it takes about 7 seconds to copy her working set. So after 70 seconds, her read latency is close to zero. At the time of 150 seconds, she moved to Redmond, Washington. And her cache now will be migrated from Massachusetts to Washington. Her data is still migrated from UK to Massachusetts. You can see that the write latency is still low, close to zero. The read latency decreases gradually. The read latency for this period is smaller than the read latency in the previous periods because the ping latency from Massachusetts to Washington is smaller than the ping latency from UK to Massachusetts. At the time of 300 seconds, she moved to Mountain View, California again. And her cache is migrated from Washington to California. Her data is still being migrated from UK to Massachusetts. Because the ping latency from Washington to California is smaller than the ping latency from Massachusetts to Washington, and the bandwidth here also higher, so the working set is transferred faster. So her read latency drops very quickly in this period. Okay, so I've been talking a lot about migration mechanism. From now on, I will talk about a different topic, which is the policy to write migration. Because of the lack of time, I'm just briefly describing our study of the policy. There will be more detail in the paper. So our goal is we want to study what and when to migrate based on the cost and the predicted benefit of the migration. And our focus on webmail application. So let's say at a given time, we know that the user travel, go to a new location, and her closest data center or site has been changed. We need to decide that should we start to migrate her data or her working set data. This decision needs to take into the consideration the cost and the benefit of migration. The benefit of migration is proportional to the number of access she will have at the new site. But we don't know about the future, so we need to predict the future based on the history data. There are two signals that we are considering. So the first signal is the number of access the user have at the new site up to this time. The other signal is how long the user stay at the new site. Based on these two signals, we can derive two simple policies. First is the count policy. The second is the time policy. For count policy, we will migrate the user data when the number of access at the new site is greater than a threshold called T count. For the time policy, we will start to migrate her data if she stay at the new site for a longer time than a threshold T time. In order to evaluate this policy, we use a tray from Hotmail service. Our tray consists of 50,000 random users who access their mailbox in August and September 2009. For each user, we record the logging time and the IP address that the user used to access their mailbox. We use a public geolocation service to map the IP address to the real world location. So given that we know the real world location of the user, we define that the user will change their size if she move more than T mile. And T is approximately the coverage of a site. We consider two granularity of a data center. When T equal to 2,000 mile, we are talking about a large data center that can cover a large amount of land. When T equal to 450 miles, we are talking about a smaller data center that can cover a state or metropolitan area. So we compare both the time policy and the count policy for these two granularity of the data center. So in this graph, the x-axis shows the percentage of users get migrated. This is a function of the threshold. Because if we use a smaller threshold, there will be more users that satisfy the threshold and get migrated. On the y-axis, it's basically the number of remote access that will enjoy access locality after migration. That's basically the benefit of migration. So you can see that the cow policy in red color and green color are higher than the time policy in blue color and pink color. So which means that the cow policy is better than the time policy. This suggests that the number of access in the past is a good indicator for the number of access in the future, while the time the user spend at a new location not necessarily a good indicator for how many access she will have. This is actually intuitive because you think about a scenario where the user go to the new location for vacation. She may stay there for a long time, but may not access her email often. Another observation in this graph is actually the curve for the cow policy decreasing. This basically say that when we use a higher threshold TCAL, we get a higher benefit. That's it because when we use a higher threshold TCAL, the user that get migrated, basically the user that have a lot of access in the past, and those users have more likely to have access in the future. So the lesson from here is if we have a fixed amount of bandwidth to migrate of a fixed set of users, we better choose the user that have a lot of access in the past in order to maximize the benefit of migration for the future. So in summary, I present overlay, which is a general mechanism to do online migration. It can be easy to integrate with caching and replication. I haven't talked about replication in this talk, but there's a various way of using overlay with replication in the paper. We build an object storage system called NOMAC that realize the idea of overlay. We also study the policy of migration based on and our focus is on Hotmail application. And with this, I will be happy to take any question. Thank you.
Any questions?
So, Nguyen, I actually have two questions. First is, what's the mode of transport the woman is using in your example?
Can you say it again?
You have somebody moving from Redmond to Mountain View to UK in 150 seconds.
Oh, that actually a hypothesis movement because like we can actually make them stay there longer, but it's not like the data is not interesting if you see a long a long line over there, right? So we just cut off compress the time that the user stay at a new location, and during the time of the movement, the user also do not access the data, so they're completely blank on the graph. So,
I thought her account is hacked and everybody is accessing her account from different locations.
Because the graph is about to show the interesting part of the evaluation, not the,
I see. Second question I have is in the example that you showed, when the mirroring is happening between UK and Silicon Valley, the IOs are actually going through Silicon Valley and then they are going to Redmond because you inserted an overlay in between. And you might be having double the delay for every IO because in the beginning it's going to always miss in the Silicon Valley.
So you're talking about this picture, right? Is it?
Yeah.
So basically so you're talking about inserting a new overlay here.
Yeah.
Okay, so for the write request, everything will go to the overlay at Redmond. So that's fine. For the read request, if the read request go in his working set, it also go to Redmond. Only if the request go to like need to go to the, it's not in his case, then it need to go to the, need to go to Silicon Valley before going back to Cambridge.
And in most cases, it would miss here, and then it would end up going to Cambridge anyways.
Yeah, it depends when the user is having that access. If the time the user have that access, like there's a lot of data only be over to the Silicon Valley, then many of his data will be available there.
I see. And do you think overlay is amenable where you can do both the reads in parallel and whichever comes back first, you can take that data?
Yeah, it's possible to support that. But the trade-off is like we're going to have redundant bandwidth for that, right? So because like the read request can like come back from two different locations, whereas we just need one. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, we have more questions. Yes,
Hi,
go ahead.
Etienne from UNSW. Is this a contrived example? Is it normal for the store to move to a different location where the user isn't? Because it seems to make sense to me that when the user moves over to China, you'd copy the cache to the place where the data is actually going to be stored rather than the cache following the user, so that it ends up in the place where the data is actually going to be stored eventually.
So you say when the user going to China, or
well, you've copied the data from Cambridge to Silicon Valley.
Right.
And then the user moves to China.
Right.
And the example here shows that the cache goes to China.
Right.
Why don't you copy the cache to Silicon Valley?
So you can flush the cache from Redmond to Silicon Valley and create a new cache at China, right? But
yes.
That's extra. In that case, the data, the working set at Silicon Valley need to also be transferred to China again in order to provide asset locality. So it's like require extra step. So it's better to instead of flushing a cache and create a non-new cache, and we can just directly migrate the cache from Redmond
to China.
Those
are just writes though, right?
Sorry?
The writes are in the cache, yeah?
The writes are in the cache.
Can say you,
the cache that the example that you're showing, the cache stored writes.
Both so read and write.
Both you, read and
yeah.
write. Okay.
Both read and write.
Okay.
Right. Hi, Emre from VMware. I was wondering if what are the ways to handle error cases or failure cases in terms of during migration or pre-migration or after migration.
That's a great question. So one drawback with this design is if we have multiple overlay at different site, then if there's a failure at one site, the data is not accessible. But we consider that it's very rare that the entire data center failed out. That's one of the drawback. Before and after migration, I think that failure can be handled with replication because replication is orthogonal to this. We can have this migration mechanism working together with replication to handle failure. Yes.
I was also wondering about possible future work on this. What would you suggest for further research?
So this basically show a new way to do migration, and there's a certain feature that better than locking and locking. So it's really depend on the case. So with this application of a geodesic application, it's clearly better that if moving data to a new location have a benefit of latency, then clearly that the traffic going to there earlier the better. But if you are migrate data inside data center and there's not much latency difference between on site and new site, then it doesn't matter to have a lock in the on site or the new site. So it really depends on the application.
Thank you.
Praveen Yalgandula, HP Labs. I didn't get how this most common case will work. I'm at my home and I go on a short trip for a week and come back to the home. So if the user moves from point A to point B and then comes back to point A, I can't see how the overlay stack will look like. Will you have two stacks for the same location at that point? Or
it's possible to have two stacks at the same location, and we can delete the stack to compress, into one single stack. So basically, if you move from A to B, there's the bottom overlay at A, the bow overlay at B, and then you move back to A, so there's another stack at A, another overlay at A, which is the top of the stack.
Okay.
And then,
So these are all different instances of time or something that,
yes.
not site-based. Overlay stack.
Not just location. So one site can have multiple overlay inside of the stack. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, let's thank the speaker once again.